had officially served the U.S. notice that the current lease would be terminated and not renewed, but did not rule out the possibility of a new agreement. Rafael Luna, spokesperson for the Philippines, sees the issue as one of national sovereignty. Alunan talked about the 1947 agreement, which is currently in effect, called the NBA.
We view the 1947 NBA as a vestige of the colonial era. Okay, it was forged at the time when we had just gained our independence, and therefore we were in that gray area, gray shade. You know, we were in transition, and I suppose it's looked upon by many of us, many Filipinos, to be, suppose, a defective agreement that impinged on our sovereignty and our independence.
Tuesday, the Philippines said the U.S. had failed to pay over $200 million in compensation promised under the current agreement. While the U.S. agrees the compensation has fallen short of what was promised in the agreement, they say the deal was based on the executive branch's best efforts to get the money, and that Congress decides the actual amount to be paid out. The Philippines responded that the U.S. best efforts were not enough. The U.S. spokesman said special negotiator Richard Armitage would like to downplay something as petty as money.
The United States panel, headed by special negotiator Richard Armitage, provided our Philippine colleagues with a respectful hearing as befits friends. The United States, for its part, emphasized its view that it had lived up to its commitments under the 1988 review, and is continuing to do so. Mr. Armitage emphasized, too, that he is not an accountant. He does not stand next to a cash register when conducting foreign relations, and he does not put a price tag on Philippine honor or sovereignty.
The Philippines says as the issue of compensation cannot be resolved, the talks cannot proceed. There's speculation the U.S. will offer food aid and use military equipment to make up the shortfall. An announcement is expected tomorrow, the last day of this round of talks. Meanwhile, the clamor in the streets for the withdrawal of the bases goes on. Organized labor and students were joined by Catholic nuns in the most recent protest. At such a protest rally in front of the U.S. Embassy earlier this week, a student leader talked about why her group opposes the bases.
You can see that through the military bases, they can intervene in our economic, political, and cultural matters, and especially in our government. We are like, Cory Aquino is like a puppet that implements policies that are of imperialist ideas, and they are dictated by the IMF World Bank.
Groups say the U.S. may be storing nuclear weapons on Philippine soil, that the bases encourage prostitution in the towns surrounding the facilities, and that the presence of the bases actually causes tension rather than ensuring peace and security. One thing for certain, negotiations concerning the bases have caused tension, which does not show signs of letting up over the long, hot Manila summer ahead. Teresa Sevin, Pacifica Radio News, Manila.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Amy Goodman, and again, tonight's top story, Joseph Fama has been convicted of second-degree murder with depraved indifference to human life, but acquitted of intentional murder in the slaying of Yusuf Hawkins, who was confronted by a gang of bat-wielding white youths on August 23, 1989, and shot to death. Fama was also convicted of one count of first-degree riot, three counts of unlawful imprisonment, three counts of menacing, and three counts of discrimination. You're listening to WBAI, Community Radio in New York. I just have a few more minutes to go here, and the rebroadcast of the evening news, which was brought to you in part live tonight, so that I can ask for your support. 212-279-3400 is the number to call. This is my last chance to ask you to support the late-night news rebroadcast. If this is a broadcast that is important to you, please pledge your support. Let us know. With a contribution of $45, you can become a member of WBAI for a year, get the folio every month here of WBAI, and tonight I'm offering a potpourri of premiums. A few of the premiums we've offered during the news, premiums that have gone very well, we're asking you to call us in now and pledge your support to WBAI on this very important night, the night of the FAMA verdict. So far, Keith Mondello's jury has not come up with a verdict, and they have said they were deadlocked several times, although the judge has sent them back to continue deliberating. They're now sequestered in a hotel and will continue tomorrow. We'll see if that jury ends up in a hung jury. But as you know, Joseph Fama, if you've been listening at all tonight, has been convicted of second-degree murder with depraved indifference to human life and acquitted of intentional murder. 212-279-3400, just a few minutes. A call-in tonight is a call-in for the kind of programming we did all night tonight. I don't know if you got a chance to hear it earlier, but just after the news, when the verdict came in, we opened the phones until 9:30. We spoke with attorney Colin Moore. We spoke with attorney Norman Siegel of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and we had people, listeners, calling in, you voicing your opinion. That is community radio. That is a response in times like tonight, when a verdict comes down. We want to open the airwaves to you. And this is something that really no one else does. If you've tuned, flipped around the dial earlier tonight until 9:30, there was no one else getting this kind of reaction. 212-279-3400. If you support this kind of radio, your radio station, give us a call now. I turned on the TV at 8:30 and 9 and saw nothing, no coverage of Bensonhurst, because the coverage happened when the verdict came down, and then there was the 11 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock local news, and it happened again. But we brought you continued coverage and a chance to interact, to talk about it, to vent your feelings. 212-279-3400. That's community radio at its best. If you support that kind of radio, please give us a call now. Let me tell you some of the premiums we're offering tonight. We're offering for $55 Race and the Media. It's a tract by Carl Ginsberg, CBS Evening News producer, talking about how the media deals with race, going back to the Moynihan Report and a look at the black family in the United States from the perspective of Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, and that how that has helped shape the media's view of race relations in this city and in this country. 212-279-3400. There is anyone on the line? There are no people calling in right now. We're asking for your support this late night, May 17th, 1990, Thursday night, our last chance to hear from you on the late night evening news. If this is a program that you listen to, that you rely on for information, even for some information, please give us a call now. For a contribution of $60, you can get one of a number of books, The Terrorism Industry, The Experts and Institutions That Shape Our View of Terror. It's just out through a lot of legal hassles. It has finally been published. In fact, it's almost as much as a contribution to become a member of WBAI. We're offering that for a contribution of $60, just $15 over our regular premium, The Terrorism Industry. There's one listener calling in right now. Thanks so much for that call. I'll read you from the back of this book by Praise for the Terrorism Industry by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He writes, "We wondered why it was that Dr. Savimbi's UNITA in Angola and the Contras in Nicaragua were freedom fighters lionized, especially by President Reagan's White House and the conservative right wing of the U.S., whereas our liberation movements such as the African National Congress and the Pan-African Congress were invariably castigated as terrorist movements. This book confirms our suspicions that there was a coherent, well-thought-out policy by the West to exercise a selective morality. It's a searing indictment of what the authors have called the terrorism industry in a well-documented, thoroughly researched scholarly study. The authors have demonstrated the terrorism industry has been very much needed in the West as a cover for its own activities and crimes." And that is Praise for the Terrorism Industry, the book we're offering tonight from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. For a contribution of $60, you can get The Terrorism Industry, The Experts and Institutions That Shape Our View of Terror by Edward Herman and Jerry O'Sullivan. We're also offering The Fate of the Forest for a contribution of $60. It's by co-authors Alexander Coburn and Susanna Hecht, Developers, Destroyers, and Defenders of the Amazon, a beautiful book, yours, autographed by the authors. 212-279-3400. And finally, a book we offered tonight, just as the verdict was coming down, an interview we did not know that the Joseph Fama verdict would be coming down. We had Larry White come into the studio. For a contribution of $60, you can get the book Merchants of Death, The American Tobacco Industry. The last time we're offering this on the late night news, the marathon ends on Saturday. This, for a contribution of $60, you can find out about a product in this country that kills 400,000 people annually. That's 1,000 people a day dying of smoking-related diseases. It's incomprehensible. 400,000 is more people than died in all U.S. wars. 212-279-3400. Pledge your support to WBAI. Find out about the American tobacco industry. 212-279-3400. This book is by Larry White. Very important book. Not easy to get now, he feels, because his publishing house, owned by the Hearst Corporation, which owns many magazines that have cigarette advertising, did not want to promote the book that much. It was put out in 1988. Very difficult to get now. Only can you order it through a bookstore. You can get it for a contribution of $60. We just have two more minutes to go. Most importantly tonight, the verdict in one of the Bensonhurst cases. There are still seven more verdicts to go. This was the verdict on Joseph Fama, who has been convicted of second-degree murder. 212-279-3400. We're asking for your support. Please call in. There's two listeners calling in. Let's make it five. 212-279-3400. The last chance you have to call in to support the late night evening news. Is this a program you want to hear? This is truly a vote for this programming. When programming decisions are made here, these kind of figures are looked at. Who's calling in? There's three listeners calling in. Thanks so much. Let's make it seven. In this last few minutes, let's make it seven. Please give us a call now. 212-279-3400. Give us a call. Pledge your support to WBAI. We need to hear from you now. 212-279-3400.
This is Emmanuel Goldstein just stepping in here to remind folks we also need volunteers. That's why the phones are ringing for a bit longer than they should, because we need people to answer the phones. So if you want to volunteer some time to WBAI, give us a call, 279-3400.
279-3400, and Emmanuel Goldstein will be having his special on in just a minute, the fifth corner, a special on computer hackers and the First Amendment, 212-279-3400. Pledge your support to WBAI. We just have 30 seconds to go. Please, we need to hear from you now. Let's make it five listeners calling in. No kidding. Do you want the late-night evening news rebroadcast, sometimes brought to you like tonight, partly live, when we have a breaking story like the Joseph Fama story? Verdict in the Joseph Fama case. Joseph Fama has been found guilty of second-degree murder with showing depraved indifference to human life, but acquitted of intentional murder. 25 years to life. His sentencing is June 11th. We still have yet to hear from the Keith Mondello jury. If you appreciate the coverage we've been doing, Julie Cohen down there tonight, Dred Scott Keyes down there tonight, inside the courthouse, outside the courthouse, give us a call now, 212-279-3400. Usually we save this kind of news for the next day. We don't stay late night to bring you more information than the news at 6 o'clock on the rebroadcast tonight. It was too important to go home. We're asking for you to support WBAI, your community-supported station, the only station tonight that stayed on for two more hours after the news to continue to bring you coverage of the Bensonhurst case, to open the phone so that you could call in and express your opinion and talk with lawyers who could explain what the verdicts were about. 212-279-3400, just 30 more seconds. 212-279-3400, there's four listeners calling in. Let's make it six. 212-279-3400, you can get a coffee mug for $55. You can also get Race in the Media by CBS Evening News producer Carl Ginsburg. A look at how the media covers race issues. Five listeners calling in. Very, very good. Thank you very, very much. We want seven listeners calling in as we go on to Emmanuel Goldstein. 212-279-3400. Emmanuel Goldstein, who actually comes from out in Stony Brook, saying that he tuned in tonight. And what'd you hear, Emmanuel?
Well, it was great to be able to turn to WBAI and know that I would hear something about a breaking story. I don't know if we've always had that dependability in the past, and we have our listeners to thank for that, because without their support, we can't do these kind of things. For us to send a reporter out there to the scene of the trial and to report back, it takes a lot of coordination, and we need to have this place operating smoothly in order for us to do things like that in the future, and the place will operate very smoothly with your support.
212-279-3400. Let's go on to the fifth corner. We need to hear from you. Please keep calling in as we go on with our next show. 212-279-3400. Pledge your support to WBAI. Let us know the evening news, the late night evening news, is a program you'd like to see continuing here. 212-279-3400. Your financial input right now is a vote of support for this program. 212-279-3400. Pledge your support. If you can pledge $100 or $200, thank you so much as we go on to our next show. 212-279-3400, a $60 contribution, and you can ask what the premiums are that we're offering tonight. Merchants of Death, the American Tobacco Industry by Larry White, The Fate of the Forest, Developers, Destroyers, and Defenders of the Amazon, signed by Alexander Coburn and Susanna Hecht, its authors, or The Terrorism Industry, the experts and institutions that shape our view of terror. Find out about some of the backgrounds of some of those people you see on TV, those so-called experts on terrorism. Who are they? Where do they come from? How many years did they work for the CIA before they went on the air without being identified as such. Well, this is a story Edward Herman and Jerry O'Sullivan give you in tremendous detail. Very well-documented book, 212-279-3400. All of these, each one for a contribution of $60. Please pledge your support. Pledge whatever you can. If you can pledge $25, thank you so much. You still become a member of WBAI. We need your help. And now we're going to go on to Emmanuel Goldstein, The Fifth Corner, his special on computer hackers and the First Amendment. Thanks so much. Have a good evening. I'm Amy Goodman, and keep calling in.
Thanks very much, Amy. And this is The Fifth Corner. Again, that phone number, 212-279-3400. It's very important that we hear from you at this point.
You can get it if you really want. Succeed at last.
And you're tuned in to The Fifth Corner here on WBAI in New York. And we have something very special for you tonight. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Do you know what that is? That's the First Amendment, folks. That's the whole thing. Very simple, very short, and very much in danger. And you'll find out how. With regards to computer hackers, the Secret Service, the First Amendment, and how it's all going to affect you. Tune in.
Trouble is all over town, yeah. It's girl looting and shooting and killing and burning out them burning. Trouble is all over my hometown, yeah. If they're looting and shooting and killing and burning out, they're burning out, yeah. But where do I stand in this here crossfire? And all, yes, I know happiness is nowhere on the ground. But through the powers of the Most High, but through the powers of the Most High, I've got to be brave. I'm still alive.
belly bottom window. They were all around, all around. I see no faces, I hear a hoarse voice ordering everybody, just what you do. You can't make a move, no, no. There he was standing so big and tall. Said, don't make a move, else I'll shoot if you do. He ain't never seen the dust of my shoes. He ain't never seen the likes of my shoes.
You've all seen the headlines. You've all seen the news. It's a frightening situation, folks. Frightening situation. 14 state raid breaks hacking rings. Teenagers arrested for hacking crimes, for breaking into emergency 911 systems. Newsletters shut down. People's homes raided in the middle. Well, early morning, anyway. At times, you don't want to be raided, let's put it that way. There's a lot going on. A lot going on throughout the country, and most of it is completely unknown to most of us because there's no headlines in it. You see the headlines, but you don't get the story. Tonight we're going to attempt to bring you the story, and we have a couple of guests that will attempt to clear things up because they're very much involved in all of this. And what is it that we're talking about? Well, possibly the best way to introduce you to the subject, if you're not aware of what's been happening over the last few months, the best way is to look at the newest edition of the Computer Hacker newsletter called 2600. There's a story in the spring issue, which is going to be released tomorrow. And if you want to subscribe to this magazine, we're going to be offering a special deal for people that want to support this radio station a little bit later on, so keep tuned in for that. From the spring edition of 2600 Magazine, the Hacker Quarterly, we have an article entitled For Your Protection. And, folks, it bears listening to, because you may not be a computer hacker, you may not be a technological enthusiast, you may not even care, but I can guarantee you, at some point, what happens to these people will rub off on you. Make no mistake about that. All right. A year ago, we told the stories of Kevin Mitnick and Herbert Zinn, two hackers who had been sent to prison. It was then, and still is today, a very disturbing chain of events. Mischief makers and explorers imprisoned for playing with the wrong toys and for asking too many questions. And we said at the time that it was important for all hackers to stand up to such gross injustices. After all, they couldn't lock us all up. Well, it now appears that such an endeavor may indeed be on the agendas of some very powerful U.S. governmental agencies. And even more frightening is the realization that these agencies don't particularly care who or what gets swept up along with the hackers. As long as all of the hackers get swept up. Apparently, we're considered even more of a threat than we had previously supposed. In retrospect, this doesn't come as a great deal of a surprise. In fact, it now seems to make all too much sense. You no longer have to be paranoid or of a particular political mindset to point to the many parallels that we've all been witness to. Censorship, clampdowns, voluntary urine tests, lie detectors, handwriting analysis, surveillance cameras, exaggerated crises that invariably lead to curtailed freedoms. All this together with the overall view that if you're innocent, you've got nothing to hide. And all made so much more effective through the magic of high technology. Who would you target as the biggest potential roadblock, if not the people who understand the technology at work? It appears the biggest threats to the system are those capable of manipulating it. What you're about to hear is frightening, plain and simple. You don't have to be a hacker to understand this, and the words and ideas are easily translatable to any time and to any culture. These words were seen on a computer bulletin board, which, if you're not familiar with the technology, is a device which people call up. You take your own computer and hook it up to a phone line and make a phone call and connect to somebody else's computer and read messages that other people have left there, hence the term bulletin board. And this is a message that appeared on one of those bulletin boards earlier this year. We can now expect a crackdown. I just hope that I can pull through this one and that my friends can also. This is the time to watch yourself, no matter what you are into. Apparently, the government has seen the last straw in their point of view. I think they are going after all the teachers, and so that is where their energies will be put, to stop all hackers and stop people before they can become threats. And this is probably, we really have no idea who that message was from, because you can't see the person that left it, but in all likelihood it's from somebody under 20 years of age. And imagine somebody under 20 years of age speaking about crackdowns, about the government coming after them, and about crushing of people who are spreading knowledge. Welcome to America, 1990. This was one of the reactions on that computer bulletin board to a series of raids on hackers, raids that had started in 1989 and spread rapidly into early 1990. The cities of Atlanta, St. Louis, and New York were major targets in what was then an undetermined investigation. Now, this in itself wouldn't have been especially alarming, since raids on hackers can almost be defined as commonplace these days. But this one was different. For the very first time, a hacker newsletter had also been shut down. Now, we'll be getting into that aspect of the case a little bit later on. But suffice to say that, yes, a newsletter was shut down. Wasn't 2600 Magazine. No, not yet. They haven't gotten 2600 Magazine yet. But they did get an electronic newsletter. What's an electronic newsletter, you may ask? Okay, it's the same thing as a regular magazine, except it's something that you read on computer. It comes over the phone lines to you, or it comes by diskette, but it's what they call a software magazine. And that's the only difference. However, that difference was enough to get that magazine shut down. People couldn't see the relationship between written words on a computer disk and written words on a piece of paper. That's what we're going to be exploring tonight. A little bit later on, we'll get more into detail on that. As part of this whole investigation and raids and all that kind of thing, bulletin boards and computer systems all over the nation were raided by the Secret Service. We've now found out that 150 Secret Service agents were involved in this. 150. And that rivals any investigation that I've ever heard of. I think computer hackers are getting more attention than the mob these days. And we have the press release from Operation Sun Devil, which, again, we'll get into a little bit later on. But in Lockport, Illinois this spring, a strange tale was unfolding. The public bulletin board system, known as a public Unix system, which is, simply put, a much bigger bulletin board system, kind of like a network where people, lots and lots of people, correspond and send mail back and forth. Sort of the bulletin board of the 90s, I guess you'd call it. Anyway, the public Unix system known as JOLNET, J-O-L-N-E-T, that had been used to transmit certain files that the Secret Service was investigating, that bulletin board had also been seized. And what's particularly odd is that, according to an electronic newsletter known as Telecom Digest, the system operator, Rich Andrews, had been cooperating with federal authorities for over a year. Andrews found the files in his system nearly 2 years ago, and he forwarded them to AT&T and was subsequently contacted by the authorities. He cooperated fully. So why was his system seized as well? Andrews claimed it was all part of the investigation, but he added One way to get hackers is by shutting down the sites they use to distribute stuff. The JOLNET raid caused outrage in the bulletin board world, particularly among administrators and users of public Unix systems. A system administrator for a system out in California known as the Well, Cliff Bigelow, said the assumption that federal agents can seize a system owner's equipment as evidence, in spite of the owner's lack of proven involvement in the alleged illegal activities, and regardless of the possibility that the system is part of the owner's livelihood, is scary to me, and should be to anyone responsible for running a system such as this. And there was quite a bit of outrage voiced at that. But there was one really, really amazing aspect to the entire thing that we have to really focus some attention on. After the electronic newsletter known as FRAC, and that was a combination of the word freak and hack, freak spelled with a PH, as many of you phone freaks out there know. After learning of the FRAC electronic mail surveillance, which is another chapter in this long saga, every bit of mail going to certain people and every bit of mail coming from certain people was watched and monitored by authorities. Well, one of the system operators of a bulletin board in Austin, Texas, known as the Phoenix Project, decided to take action to protect the privacy of his users. I will be adding a secure encryption routine into the email, electronic mail, in the next 2 weeks. I haven't decided exactly how to implement it, but it'll let two people exchange mail encrypted by a password only known to the two of them. Now, that's to prevent people from looking at private mail. Okay, these are people that the mainstream press would call computer hackers, discussing how to protect their privacy. Not discussing how to hack, how to break into things, how to protect their privacy and prevent people from invading it, from reading their mail and seeing things they shouldn't be seeing. Sounds kind of ridiculous, doesn't it? That computer hackers concerned with these things. Well, folks, that's a lot of what computer hacking is about. Figuring out ways to keep your privacy in a world where your privacy is getting more and more precious. And anyway, to get back to what the system operator on that bulletin board was saying, I'll be adding a secure encryption routine into the email in the next 2 weeks. I haven't decided exactly how to implement it, but it'll let two people exchange mail encrypted by a password only known to the two of them. Anyway, I do not think I am due to be busted. I don't do anything but run a board. Still, there is that possibility. I assume that my lines are all tapped until proven otherwise. There is some question to the wisdom of leaving the bulletin board up at all, but I've personally phoned several government investigators and invited them to join us here on the board. If, however, I begin to feel that the board is putting me in any kind of danger, I'll pull it down with no notice. I hope everyone understands. It looks like it sweeps time again for the folks. I'm sorry, for the feds. Looks like it sweeps time again for the feds. Let's hope all of us are still around in 6 months to talk about it. The new security was never implemented. The Phoenix Project was seized within days. And the clampdown intensified still further. On March 1st, the offices of Steve Jackson Games, a publishing company in Austin, were raided by the Secret Service. According to the Associated Press, the home of the managing editor was also searched. The police and Secret Service seized books, manuals, computers, technical equipment, and other documents. Agents also seized the final draft of a science fiction game written by the company. According to the Austin American-Statesman, the authorities were trying to determine whether the game was being used as a handbook for computer crime. Callers to the Illuminati bulletin board, which was run by Steve Jackson Games, received the following message after that day. Before the start of work on March 1st, Steve Jackson Games was visited by agents of the United States Secret Service. They searched the building thoroughly, tore open several boxes in the warehouse, broke a few locks, and damaged a couple of filing cabinets, which we would gladly have let them examine had they let us into the building, answered the phone discourteously at best, and confiscated some computer equipment, including the computer that the BBS bulletin board system was running on at the time. So far, we have not received a clear explanation of what the Secret Service was looking for, what they expected to find, or much of anything else. We are fairly certain that Steve Jackson Gaines is not the target of whatever investigation is being conducted. In any case, we have done nothing illegal and have nothing whatsoever to hide. However, the equipment that was seized is apparently considered to be evidence in whatever they're investigating, so we aren't likely to get it back anytime soon. It could be a month. It could be never. To minimize the possibility that this system will be confiscated as well, we have set it up to display this bulletin, and that's all. There is no message base at present. We apologize for the inconvenience, and we wish we dared do more than this. Apparently, and we'll have this confirmed in just a moment, one of the system operators of the Phoenix Project was also affiliated with Steve Jackson Games, and that was all the authorities needed. And we have Steve Jackson with us on the phone. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. Now, you heard most of that story, I imagine.
Yes.
Would you care to point out what exactly happened on March 1st in your own words?
I got an early morning phone call from a very upset member of my staff to the effect that there were federal agents searching our building that wouldn't let anybody in. And over the next few hours, what developed was that we were being searched by the Secret Service. They weren't allowing anyone in the building. There are some pretty funny stories about their interactions with our employees as they came up. We finally got into the building about 1 in the afternoon, and it had been gone through pretty thoroughly. Some offices were not in bad shape, but some areas had been shaken down very thoroughly. The warehouse was a mess, for instance, because they had just gone through it tearing up carts. So,
Can I just ask one question before you go any further? Tell us something about what Steve Jackson Games is. What kind of company is it?
Ah, okay. Begin at the beginning, Steve. We publish games, adventure games, role-playing games. The best-known role-playing game is Dungeons & Dragons, although that's not one of ours. But if you've ever seen Dungeons & Dragons, you know the kind of thing that we publish, not just in the fantasy genre, but in all different genres. We also publish a game called Illuminati, which is about secret conspiracies to control the world, and the irony of that just comes back and haunts me every day. That's the game that our bulletin board was named after. And if anyone has read the Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea, or if anyone has seen the Church of the Subgenius, then you know the kind of humor we're talking about here.
So the Secret Service took an interest in what you were doing, and what was it that they seized? They seized a particular game that you were working on?
Well, they seized material out of several of our offices. They took two computers from here, and they also visited the home of our managing editor and took his computer. And when we compared notes and put things together, we realized that they had taken all of the computers that had anything on them for a particular new game that we were producing. The name of that game was GURPS Cyberpunk. GURPS stands for Generic Universal Role-Playing System. That's our big game. And the GURPS Cyberpunk was supposed to be a world book, a background gaming book, for people interested in the cyberpunk genre. Now, cyberpunk is a science fiction genre, high-tech, low-life. It takes high technology and shows what the future will be like if that technology is used in a very oppressive and inhuman fashion. Think of the movie Blade Runner or the Max Headroom TV show. And there's some very good video cyberpunk. Think of the works of William Gibson or Bruce Sterling, and there is great literary cyberpunk. Anyway, one of the significant elements of cyberpunk is computer hacking, usually seen as a way by which the hero against an oppressive bureaucracy, although sometimes it's a purely criminal action as well. Anyway, in a cyberpunk future, you can do computer hacking mentally. You can attach your own brain to a computer. You can move mentally into the net and do all kinds of things. And that is one of the things that our book was about. So here we are putting things together and realizing that the only computers that they have taken are the ones with the cyberpunk manuscript on them, that they've taken all the backups for those, that they've taken all of the hard copy, and we're looking at each other and we're saying, was this what they were after? And we still don't know, because they adamantly refuse to give us any justification. The standard line is, we cannot comment on an investigation in progress, meaning they don't have to explain themselves. They're the Secret Service. But the next day, when I was in their offices with an attorney trying to get at least copies of all the files that they had taken, without which we couldn't stay in business, they gave me a lot of comments about the manual for computer crime, the handbook for computer crime that they said I was publishing. So, yes, I think they didn't like that book, and I think they came very close to suppressing it.
Now, this is very significant, because I've been involved in the computer hacking scene for a number of years now. I've seen many, many raids on computer bulletin boards and teenagers who are playing with their computers and making free phone calls, perhaps, things like that. But this is the first time that I've ever heard of an actual manuscript being seized by the U.S. government because they don't like what it's saying in regards to computers. And that's what appears to have happened here.
Well, looks like I had the honor of being the first. I'm hoping to raise enough fuss about it that I'm also the last.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, how come this hasn't been splashed all over the newspapers, you know, front page, that somebody's manuscript has been seized by the government?
Well, I guess it just depends on the orientation of the media. The Austin American Statesman picked up the story, but their interest in it was publicizing the good work the Secret Service was doing in hunting down hackers. If you read to the bottom of their very long story, their story was on the front page, but you had to read all the way down to the bottom to get the idea that there was any question at all about what they had taken. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Newsweek did run a story, which was, in fact, a very good story. It had a couple of minor problems of fact, which don't bother me at all, because they were really trying to get the story. But overall, no, the headlines are being grabbed by the Secret Service people who will send out press releases about all the damage being done by evil hackers, the tremendous threat to every citizen caused by the hackers, and therefore I suppose this justifies whoever they run over.
So in an attempt to round up all the hackers, a lot of other people are going to be rounded up as well. Sounds like we've heard this somewhere before, you know?
Yeah, it does sound familiar, doesn't it?
So what is your standing right now? Have you lost money because of this?
Yes. Probably, I mean, my best guess is a total of about $125,000, which was more than we had in the bank. We're in a business that depends very heavily on what is the new product. Game stores want to know what's new. They took it when it was about a week away from going to the printer. Well, this totally kicked the legs out from under our business, you know, as far as cash goes. We looked at where we were and what we had to do, and we decided that we had a choice between either just going out of business right then or laying off half the staff and trying to continue, and we did go through the layoffs, but 8 people lost their jobs the next week because of that raid, and it wasn't their fault. We're still in business. About 6 weeks after the raid, we did manage to get a rewritten game book out there. We pieced it together from you know, a page here and a loose computer disk there, and because the game had been posted on our bulletin board, some people had downloaded it, and you know, we actually got back one chapter, I believe, from a user who had copied it, you know, off our bulletin board. did a whole lot of rewriting, and we got the book out with a little note on the front just telling people that this was the book that was taken by the Secret Service, and a note in the introduction telling people entirely what had happened to date, because I want the world to hear about this.
Well, you know, it's incredible, because a lot of reports that have been circulating give the wrong impression that it's a computer game. Therefore, it's there's some kind of it's something you play on your computer, but it's not that at all, is it? It's actually a book. How does the game work?
It's a book of game rules, and a lot of the rules are that tell you how to play. The part of a futuristic hacker, but it doesn't tell you how to hack. A comparison would be, saying that a James Bond movie teaches you how to be a safecracker, because you see James Bond, leaning over a safe, and doing something to it, and then it goes poof, and it opens.
Uh-huh. Makes you wonder if you had a video cassette of War Games, would they have taken that too?
You can't underestimate the influence that War Games had on the computer field and on hacking. A lot of people never heard of hacking until War Games came out. That was an important movie.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Steve Jackson, the owner of Steve Jackson Games in Austin, Texas, whose company was raided by the Secret Service, whose material was seized. He still hasn't gotten it back. And we're presenting this as part of a special program tonight on WBAI, and it's also part of our fundraiser in the springtime of 1990. We have a special deal for listeners who want more information on all of this and at the same time want to help out the radio station so that we can keep material like this coming to you. For a pledge of $55, you will receive not only a year of the WBAI program guide, but you'll also receive a year of 2600, the Hacker Quarterly. And we'd like to see a strong response right off the bat so that we don't have to spend a whole lot of time talking and asking for money, because this is a fascinating subject matter. We have a lot more. This is only the tip of the iceberg, folks, only the tip of the iceberg. We have a lot of details we want to get out to you. And by calling 279-3400 now, area code 212, and pledging your support to WBAI, you will be getting information like this as it happens. You'll be finding out things that a lot of other people don't know about. There is very little way to find out these kind of things. So for a $55 pledge, you'll get 1 year of 2600 magazine, the Hacker Quarterly. It's a big, in-depth story about all of this, the Steve Jackson raids, the Legion of Doom, LOD, the newsletter in St. Louis that was shut down by the authorities, and we'll be getting into that a little bit later on as well. And in addition to that, you'll also, when things like this aren't happening, you'll find out other things about technology, how technology works, how you can use technology to your benefit, legally, of course, but how it also can be used illegally, how your privacy can be invaded, how your phone calls can be listened to, and how you can generally be ripped off by things like the phone company and other big, large agencies and companies. So give us a call, 279-3400. Let's get two calls, okay? If we see two calls come in, we can go right back to Steve Jackson and find out more about what happened with the Secret Service, and also find out a lot more about this particular story, because this is the biggest computer hacker crackdown in history. That's right. It's turning into something like a mob, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how the general public actually feels about all of this, how they perceive hackers, because to be honest, I don't think I know anybody that's in the general public anymore. It's something that's scary. Manipulation of the media is, well, it's scary, but it's also necessary, because we all have to manipulate the media to some degree. You know, we have to get the story straight. And unfortunately, right now, the wrong people are getting the story straight. So, or getting it straight in their point of view. So, 212-279-3400, that's the telephone number to call. A subscription to 2600 is yours with a pledge of $55. That, along with a membership of WBAI and the program guide for a year. And let's get a couple more calls, 279-3400. We'll be taking your phone calls, too, later, but we do want to see a strong response so that we can keep information like this coming to you. Now, Steve Jackson, you're still there, I hope.
Still there.
Okay, survived that. Tell us, where do you stand right now at this moment?
Well, right now I'm pacing back and forth in my office wondering how long I'm going to be in business. That's where I stand. The raid has cost us more money than we had, and while we've kept our heads above water, you know, over the ensuing 2.5 months, we're in trouble, and we're working very hard to pull out. As a matter of fact, I'm not raising as much hell as I would like to, because my first priority has got to be to keep the business alive for myself, for the 8 people who still have jobs here, for our fans, and that's pretty much a 24-hour-a-day job right now.
What kind of response have you gotten from the people that, well, you describe them as your fans, what kind of response have you gotten from them?
Universally supportive, and, I mean, we have set the Illuminati bulletin board system back up, and we get a lot of extremely supportive comments, a lot of sympathies, an awful lot of how can this happen in America, and a lot of people saying that they're writing their congressman, so maybe something will come of it. We've also had support from a quarter that I didn't expect, and it was really heartwarming because it came from our distributors, the companies that buy our games and then turn around and resell them to the retailers. Now, these people live and die by the bottom line. They are your hard-headed capitalists. But several of these hard-headed capitalists just volunteered to make large payments to us in advance, and then you just take a credit slip and work it out later, in order to get us through the first few really bad weeks. And that was the thing that blew me away. Because you expect sympathy from the guy in the street when the government steps on you. When you get sympathy from businesses, and the businesses will write a check to back up the sympathy, that's amazing, and that made me feel good.
What was your feeling before all this started happening? Did you think things like this were possible?
Possible, yes, but I did not expect to encounter them outside of the Stephen King story.
I see.
Now I think Stephen King knows just exactly what he's talking about when he writes about cold-blooded, short-haired guys with guns on the government payroll.
Did you actually, were you there when this happened?
No, I was at home asleep when the raid started, and I got several phone calls about it within about a 15-minute space. I talked about it with the people on the scene, and we decided that if I were to come out there and stand in the rain outside my business while it was raided, I would probably end up saying something very regrettable and get taken downtown and might not come back. So I came on the scene just as they left.
Incredible. Now, how many games does Steve Jackson Games have currently on the market?
Well, we keep things in print for a long time, so I think our total list of products, not just games, but, you know, things that go with games, would be over 100. I'd say we have about 20 that are really active right now.
And where would people be able to find those kind of games? In any computer store or...
They're not computer games. None of them are, so you wouldn't find them in a computer store.
Good point. I fell for that myself, didn't I?
Okay. Yeah, well, it's an easy one to do. You know, it originated in the Associated Press report. It wasn't in the initial reports. The Associated Press just jumped to a conclusion, and then that's followed it everywhere. No, you'd find it in a hobby or game store. Some of them you would find in a Walden Books. Walden's does carry our line. Not the whole line, but they have some of it.
Well, where could people find a game that just came out, the one that was raided by the Secret Service?
Let's see, Walden's hasn't picked that one up yet, so you couldn't find that one in the Walden Books. Just call, I mean, look up games in your yellow pages. You're in the New York area. I know that the Complete Strategist chain carries them in New York. I don't know whether Forbidden Planet does or not.
Okay, well, I'm sure if enough outraged people call these places and ask for it, they'll eventually wind up getting it.
We'd love to supply all we can. What can I say?
Now, what's your next step? Do you have legal representation? Has the ACLU stepped in at all?
We have talked to the ACLU on the local, state, and national level. The state and national level did not find the case interesting, said that they only dealt with class actions. The local ACLU representative asked a lot of very intelligent questions, but I haven't heard from them in a week or so. I suppose I really should call back and rattle the cage a little bit.
That's kind of disheartening to hear that the ACLU hasn't taken an active interest in this. And
I was disappointed. I would have understood if they had given it serious consideration and said, no, we can't handle it. But to just be told on both the state and national level, no, we only do class actions, that surprised me. I did not think that that was the way the ACLU worked.
Did you call the Washington office?
Yes.
And that, you were told the same thing?
Yes.
Well, and if anyone out there has more information about this, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to open up the phone lines for listeners to give a call in at 279-3407. If somebody wants to come on the line now and talk to Steve Jackson live, that would it's now possible to do that. So give us a call, 279-3407, if you want to be on the air. And give us a call at 212-279-3400. If I sound confused, it's because our delay system is doing things it's never done before, and I've... are you still there, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. I didn't lose you, at least. We're going to be continuing with this story. We're going to be... we're going to be following up on the... well, folks might have heard stories about computer hackers getting into the 911 computer system throughout the country, and we'll be zeroing in on just what exactly happened there. Steve, did you hear something about that?
I've heard a lot, mostly from people who call me to ask what's going on, and I say, I don't know, and then they tell me their version of what's going on. I have seen, you know, government press releases that say, you know, there's a conspiracy to destroy the 911 system, and that's one end. At the other end, I've heard that, no, the only thing that's going on is that there was a document floating around of information about the 911 system, and it didn't have any computer code, didn't have anything in it, and people have just blown all that up into a terrible threat that would justify, you know, taking all this authority. And I don't know. I'd love to know.
Well, that's a good lead-in for something that's going to sound awfully commercial, but folks, if you want to know what really happened, then your best source for that is 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, and we are giving that to you with any pledge of $55. If you want to give us a call and you find that you're getting a busy signal because all the call-in lines are now taken, give some serious thought to calling and making a pledge, because by making a pledge to WBAI, you're making an investment in free speech. And I don't mean to sound high-handed by saying that, but it is true, because if you don't do it, who is? Who is going to keep this station going? Who is going to keep thoughts like this on the air? Who's going to tell you when the Secret Service raids publishers in the United States? I mean, even as a kid, you know, that would strike a chord with me. That would make me say, what the hell is going on out there? This is not right. And it's not right. It's not right to see things like this happen, to see computer bulletin boards shut down simply because they're discussing things that that the authorities don't like to be discussed. But now it's going a step further. And anybody that even writes something on paper about things that aren't supposed to be discussed is subject to the same kind of treatment. Steve Jackson Games is, I almost said was, almost was, but it still is, an organization that puts out creative role-playing games, not even on computer disks. They're books, they're on paper. But the Secret Service raided them because they thought they were up to something else. They thought they were up to something illegal, and that gave them the grounds to almost put them out of business. The final chapter is still unwritten here, but you can keep abreast of the situation. Take advantage of this offer because it's only being made tonight as part of this radio program. For a $55 pledge, you'll get a full year of 2600 magazine, starting with this issue, which is coming out tomorrow, the spring 1990 edition. And 2600 is making this donation to the radio station. Not one penny is going back to 2600. It's a donation to free speech that the magazine is making. It's a loss of sorts, I suppose, but it's well worth it. It's well worth it because if it helps out here, then it helps all of us in the long run. So give that some thought, folks. Give that some thought, please. 212-279-3400. Support this. Support this exchange of ideas. Now, let's exchange some ideas, get some callers on. Steve Jackson of Steve Jackson Games in Austin, Texas, is on the line. His company was raided by the Secret Service on March 1st. And let's take some calls. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Middletown, New York.
Okay. What's your question?
I just want to find out. Give me 5 seconds and give details on the name and stuff like that, so I can write a letter properly. Okay.
Steve, do you have names?
You know the names of all who I can talk to my congressman about. I don't know who I'm writing about yet. I'm gonna put the phone down and run back to the desk.
Okay. Bye. Well. All right. I think what the caller was asking basically was for us to reiterate what we've been talking about. Basically, Steve Jackson Games is an organization in Austin, Texas. It was raided by the Secret Service on March 1st did they ever say exactly why they were doing this when you asked them? Did they ever give a reason in their words?
The only justification that they ever gave was that this was an investigation of data piracy. The only data that I know of that's been taken was mine.
Uh-huh. It's an interesting side note, too, because many times computer hackers are accused of doing certain things, and we find that the authorities, in their zealousness to prosecute computer hackers, break all of the laws that they're supposed to be protecting. They read people's mail, they break into computer systems, they steal things from people's homes, and, you know, whether or not they're stealing is open to debate, I suppose, but I think you feel pretty much like you've been robbed, don't you?
Well, if I'd been robbed, the insurance would cover it.
that's true. Well, I guess insurance doesn't cover Secret Service raids, does it?
Oh.
Well, that's something you learn about. So to answer that caller's question, Steve Jackson Games is the name of the organization that was raided. It was raided by the Secret Service in Austin, Texas, on March 1st. But there's more to this story that we haven't gotten to yet, and we'll be reading excerpts from 2600 Magazine as the night goes on. We're on for another 3 hours. We're on for another 3 hours talking about this subject. So again, folks, we have all the call-in lines lit up. They're all busied out, so if you want to support the radio station, let's get those lines lit up, too. Wake up those people in the tally room, 279-3400. We'll try to get as many calls in as we can. We also have more guests coming in later on. We have more subjects to cover. This is a very big story, and hopefully, it's going to explode in the media the way it should have exploded in the media in the first place. Steve, do you have any sensation that somebody's going to write a story for a major newspaper about this?
Sometimes I think they will, and sometimes I think they won't. On the one hand, we have had inquiries from media that haven't written anything yet, so maybe there are people out there working on stories. And I've heard, from the Wall Street Journal on one end of the spectrum to the Village Voice on the other, so maybe so. On the other hand, it's real clear to me that the Secret Service doesn't want this publicized. They've made that very clear to me.
But can you go into that? How have they made that clear?
Well, let's see. I still have some computers here in the office, and I'm keeping my notes on this whole story on one of them, so let me just look here and get the date so I can get the story right.
So a computer they didn't get to yet, huh?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Okay, yeah, this was on March 26th. On that day, we actually got some of our files back from the Secret Service. Not very many, and not in good order, and they weren't the current files, but they did actually send us some files back. So I called the Secret Service agent who had been in charge, and thanked him for returning our property, asked him when we could expect to see the rest of our files and our hardware. And let's see. He made a number of comments. He said that the reason that we didn't have all our, or one reason we didn't have all our files was that they couldn't copy some of the subdirectories on the computer. And that I think to anyone who knows how to use a computer, that's going to sound very strange. There are several interpretations of that, including that I was not being told the truth, or that I was being told the truth, but that the person who was making the copies didn't really know how to use the computer. I don't know which of those is more frightening. I don't like the idea that the federal agents who are supposed to be investigating computer crime don't understand how to copy a disk. But some of the two-fingered typing that I saw when I visited the Secret Service offices here in Austin was very frightening. Anyway, going on with the things he told me, I asked when we would get our systems returned. And the agent said three things. He said that some of our hardware would definitely never be returned, that it was going to be confiscated. He said that he did not like seeing front page stories in the Austin American Statesman. And he said that in the future, if I wanted to talk to him, I could have my lawyer talk to him. Now, I have to point out that he didn't draw any connection between any of these statements he made to me. He did not tell me that my hardware would be confiscated because I had talked to the paper. He didn't say anything like that. So he didn't make a threat. I was just left to draw my own conclusions from the things that he had told me. And my attorney was told substantially the same thing when he called in the same words, that the agent didn't like seeing front page stories in the Austin paper.
Well, let me just ask you something. You said that there is certain hardware that will definitely not be returned. If it's found out that you're innocent of any wrongdoing, how can they hold? What is it, first of all, they want to hold?
Well, he didn't specify. And a couple of weeks later, I received a call from the assistant U.S. attorney, who, as far as I can tell, is the one who is giving the Secret Service agents his marching orders. But I don't know this for sure. That's just the way it looks from the outside. And he told me that I would get all of my material back. And in a later call, he gave a date, but that date has passed, and later dates have passed. And the last that they said was that we would get all our material back on or before Thursday the 24th. And it would be nice if that happens. Of course, here I am talking on the radio now about it. Of course, that couldn't possibly affect when they decide that they no longer need my hardware, right?
I certainly hope not. Let's take another call. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
New York City, Manhattan.
Okay. What's your question?
Well, I heard that basically this whole thing is related to a question of alleged piracy. Is this a question of possession of pirated material or duplication and sale of that?
Steve?
Well, I'm still not clear on why they raided us. There have been all kinds of things in the papers about how they're finding people doing hacking for phone fraud and people doing hacking for espionage and people doing this and people doing that. What we did was write a book about imaginary hacking into imaginary futuristic computers.
And basically they said this was a blueprint to encourage people or something?
Well, not in those words, but the words they used were that this was a handbook for computer crime. So, yeah, I think you're probably right.
I work with a bulletin board myself. You work with Illuminatus, I believe?
Illuminati, yeah.
Yeah, I work with Tentra Red Flag in Manhattan. I don't know, in basically 212. Basically, this also concerns me because, you know, I've been watching the situation also. And, well, you know, it's very strange that they would put it in these terms, because it seems like they had no warrant, they had no specification for this. This all started, didn't it, about 10 years ago when they sort of said that that the complexity of information storage and retrieval would necessitate increased security, I believe?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what happened 10 years ago.
But no, that's when it started. When this started to become a proliferation of a lot of this stuff, the government made a proclamation to the academic community. I think it received distribution on the front page of the Times, so a science section, I'm not sure which said that due to the increased complexity and sensitive nature of encryption, computer security, and information storage and retrieval, that they had needed increased powers to control it.
Well, that's a very scary concept, because what you're basically saying is that the government is overstepping its current limits, or the limits it had 10 years ago, on anything that has something to do with computers. So
one of the comments that was made while I was in the Secret Service office the day after the raid was an agent expressing the opinion that modems ought to be outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that that's something that a lot of people in mainstream America seem to feel. It's because of the way hackers have been portrayed in the media. But think of it, by outlawing modems, you're in effect outlawing, what's the parallel? Telephones, I suppose, for most people.
Well, I, from running the 24-hour system that gets a lot of fire from a lot of extreme elements, I don't see what the government's problem is, because personally, there's also a lot of methods of protecting oneself on the question of having someone intruding into your system. Usually a lot of these so-called hackers that break into systems are people who have access to systems, and they're usually academic systems whereby, you know, they have some interreaction on a system level, I believe, with the computer system itself. In other words, it's not like calling up into a bulletin board and trying to break in. It's usually something whereby someone is entering specific commands to the computer to get calculations or something of that nature, like basically on the structure of old CPM bulletin board type of things.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us something about your bulletin board? What kind of subjects would you cover?
Well, basically, we're socialist-oriented. We try to have people call in and deposit all types of democratic, labor, socialist, Marxist-Leninist, anarchist type of literature to have a basic discussion of issues which are relevant to our times. We feel very uncomfortable with the circumstances as they now exist, you know, because we feel it's very awkward to talk about a lot of issues until the questions of basic democratic rights are discussed in this country, which has never been done so. I mean, they've come down on the Wobblies, the socialists, the labor movement in the 1800s, the labor movement again in the 30s, the communist movement, the black liberation movement, and I mean, what democratic rights do we really have without safeguards?
And
with the increased amount of technology, it makes every issue almost irrelevant, because we have no ability whatsoever unless we have protection.
And that's very true, because control of this technology is the key. I think that's what these battles are going to be focusing upon. Are the individuals going to have control over the technology, or is technology going to be in charge of them? That's really what we see with these raids. A board like yours that's discussing issues that people have discussed for centuries could conceivably be taken away from you because the authorities don't like what you're saying. And it could be done legally, because it's not considered speech. It's not considered the same thing as pen and pencil. Computer bulletin boards are thought of as something else. And really, what you said before about computers being used to calculate and things like that, think about it. Computer bulletin boards, they're not even being used for calculation or figuring things out. They're being used simply to pass messages back and forth. what is the problem with that? You know, you have to wonder when agencies take such a strong stand against people sending messages back and forth, and being anonymous and communicating ideas and thoughts and information. Why do they have such a problem with that? And how come more people aren't protecting that right?
Well, the authorities are basically afraid that they can't control the technology at all. I mean, they've created it. They want to benefit from it, but they don't feel that they can control it. Once there's a large amount of proliferation.
Well, I don't think the authorities have created the technology. I think
as industries, I'm seeing the authorities as glove in hand with industry and the corporate structure.
Uh-huh. But technology in the hands of individuals is a wonderful thing,
mm-hmm.
And that's what I like to see more of, people taking charge of this.
They're definitely afraid of it because
their attitude is a very threatening thing.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Steve?
It's a wonderful thing, but to an authoritarian, it's a very threatening thing.
Oh, yeah, well, I've often said that to any form of government, an individual is the biggest threat.
Technology that the authorities and their enforcers don't understand is, of course, the most threatening of all.
Quite true, quite true. And the fight to understand this technology is well underway. I want to thank the caller for calling in. We're going to go to another call here. Again, folks, we need your support. We need to continue to bring you programs like this. And just ask yourself this question. Where have you heard this before? Can't really think of any place, can you? Because other radio stations, other TV stations, newspapers, magazines... Well, they, in all honesty, I don't think they figured it out yet. I don't think they understand what the implications are. But even when they do figure out the implications, will it sell newspapers? Will it make headlines? Will it make people tune in and bring those Arbitron ratings up? Well, you know, that's not important to us. What's important to us is making people think, making ourselves think, bringing out issues, bringing out new ideas and new thoughts. And... by supporting us, by supporting WBAI, you're supporting free speech. Simple as that. 279-3400, area code 212, make a pledge of $55. We take Visa, we take MasterCard. Yeah, it's MasterCard. Visa and MasterCard to make it easier on you. I know $55 is a lot of money for some people. It's a lot of money for me. But spread out over however many months that Visa or MasterCard will let you get away with, it can be something that you can stand. And for that $55, you will get a one-year subscription to 2600 Magazine, the Hacker Quarterly, a magazine that deals with issues like this on an ongoing basis. And unfortunately, at this point in time, really the only place you can find out about this kind of thing as it's happening. And in addition to that, find out all kinds of neat little secrets about technology, about what the computer hackers are really up to, about what people all over the world are doing with technology, about how technology will affect you, how Big Brother is watching or will be watching. 2600 has reported on things like lie detector tests and urine analysis and all kinds of things that are just happening left and right, you know, total system integration. 2600 has reported on the phone company and how the phone company rips people off. I shouldn't say phone company. There's so many of them now, and they're all ripping people off to some degree. 2600 is the place to find out how they're ripping you off and what you can do about it. 2600 is the place to find out how phone freaks and computer hackers do what they do. So you can find out for yourself exactly what is happening, and you can read through the headlines. And as a special offer tonight, as part of this fundraising drive, for a pledge of $55, you'll get a year of 2600 magazines. 48 pages, comes out quarterly, and it's... that was it hitting the microphone there. That's the noise it makes. I guess a must, people have described this as. All details about this whole investigation by the Secret Service and a lot of other things, a review of the cuckoo's egg, for instance, how to listen in on phone calls, not so much how you can listen in on phone calls, but how people could be listening in on your phone calls, something that I think we should all know about and something that really isn't talked about very often. So by calling 279-3400, you'll be doing three things. You'll be educating yourself, you'll be helping out WBAI, and you'll be supporting freedom of speech and freedom of information and all that kind of thing. 279-3400. It's very important that you support us at this stage, no matter where you are, Connecticut, Long Island, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, give us a call. 212-279-3400. And let's go to another call. And Steve, I don't want to keep you up too much longer, so let's try to race through these calls here.
Okay, well I'll hang in there as long as they're having a good time with the questions.
Okay.
Tell the story.
Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Hi, New York, Manhattan.
Okay. What's your question?
What? Steve, I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay, I can barely hear you.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions
and also
a comment regarding the Secret Service and covert aspects of its history.
Right.
First of all, have you considered filing suit against them based on infringement of your constitutional rights of freedom of expression and also for things like, malicious prosecution and, of course, for damages and,
I think about it every day. Right now, I don't really have enough money to keep the business going, let alone to spend a lot on attorneys. If I can find help from someone with legal expertise who thinks that there's an important case here, that would be very exciting and very welcome.
Steve, let me just break in at this moment. If you want to give out a phone number for somebody to get a hold of you, feel free.
Okay. Our office phone number is 512-447-7866.
Also, you mentioned that they gave you a date that they would release equipment back to you, and they didn't, gave you several dates and didn't follow through. Are you recording your phone conversations with them? And also, when you go in to speak to them, you should have a tape recorder on you, perhaps, so that, if they say things which, in fact, turn out to be false, you would have that to use against them.
That's an interesting question. Of course, there's also the question of whether that invades their right of privacy, and I don't know the answer to that.
Well,
most of the promises that they have made over the past couple of months have been to my attorney rather than directly to me. So on the one hand, I couldn't record those were I inclined, but on the other hand, there's a witness.
Let me just say that the laws governing whether or not you can record a phone conversation, they differ from state to state. I know in New York it's legal for you to record a phone conversation as long as one person knows about it. It may be the same in Texas, so if you check your state laws, you'll know if that's legal.
Yeah, I don't want to go to their level.
And also, I'd like to mention, although it may not be directly related to this action by the Secret Service, that as listeners to WBAI may be aware, elements within the Secret Service were definitely involved in the conspiracy that assassinated John Kennedy. They had custody of the body. The limousine had its windshield changed twice secretly while it was, in their custody to change, as information about the direction which the bullets were supposed to have come in changed. The body was altered under their custody. There were people within the Secret Service at that time involved in that conspiracy, and there are definitely right-wing anti-democratic elements still within that organization.
Well, that's another show in itself. There's all kinds of things I suppose you could go on about.
Well, you got to know who you're up against.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. People might be asking, why is the Secret Service involved with computer hackers? And it was a number of years ago, I believe, back in 85, 86, around then, that control of investigation of computer hackers was transferred from the FBI to the Secret Service because it supposedly had something to do with the Treasury Department. The Secret Service is part of the Treasury Department, and phone fraud, computer fraud is said to be something that would concern them. Now, God knows what the relation is here in this particular case. It does seem rather odd, though, to have members of the Secret Service investigating a publishing company.
Well, when did you ever hear of a bureaucratic organization giving up power?
Yeah, well, not around here, that's for sure. I want to thank the caller for calling in, and we have one more call. Again, please give us a call to our support line. I guess that's the wrong word for it. We're not going to give you guidance or tell you prayers or something like that, but we will take your pledge. We have a bunch of people who have sacrificed whatever they do at 1 o'clock in the morning on Fridays. I guess sleep is what most people do. But they've given that up to be down in the tally room and answer your phone calls. They're listeners very much like you. In fact, we could use a couple more of them to come down and be a part of WBAI at any time of the day or night, up until Saturday night at midnight, which is when we stop this fundraiser. And they will answer your phone call, and they will guide you through the pledge process. It's a very pleasant process, actually. I've been through it a couple of times myself, and they'll just take your name and address and however much you want to pledge. 279-3400. Remember, for that $55 pledge, as a special offer, you'll get the 2600 magazine delivered to wherever you want it delivered, I guess, for the next year. And you'll be on top of situations like this, which I think are fascinating. I really think these situations are fascinating, and unfortunately, though, they're becoming more prevalent. We still have a lot more to get into tonight. We're on until 3:30 tonight. WBAI saw the importance of this subject, and that's why we have more time tonight. Let's hope that our listeners see the importance in WBAI, because believe me, there are forces out there. There are entities out there that want to see another top 40 radio station in the city. You know, I've got nothing against top. Well, that's not exactly true. I've got some things against top 40, but I don't want to say top 40 shouldn't exist. It can exist in its own particular part of the dial, but WBAI is essential. It really is. You won't hear these stories, you won't hear these thoughts, and you won't have access to a radio station the way WBAI gives you access. So give us a call, 212-279-3400. Make that pledge. It's not a painful process. It's quite pleasant, because you'll be a part of this whole mess of free speech. And freedom of speech can get pretty messy, folks. I think we're demonstrating that tonight. Steve, what do you say we take one more phone call?
Sounds good.
Okay, here we go. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Yes, Manhattan.
Okay.
Yes, hi. excuse me, is this Elliot?
Elliot?
I'm sorry, I thought this your name was Elliot. I'm sorry.
No, it's Emmanuel, but...
Emmanuel, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. excuse me. Great show. And I also want Steve, if he would give an address, too, and don't forget the other callers' questions in terms of helping us to format a letter to our Congress people. I feel this is a very important issue to come around. I had the opportunity.